Hello and welcome. Great to be with you on this Friday, the 27th of February. Standing in for Tiger, who is not well and should be back with us on Monday here on Let's Talk. Before I continue on, let me firstly begin by acknowledging traditional owners of the land where Let's Talk is broadcast. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Indigenous elders. Good morning to you. And hello to you if you're listening to Let's Talk through the National Indigenous Radio Service or indeed on the web at 989fm.com.au. Today we're going to be speaking with the Secretariat of the National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare. We'll be speaking to the CEO, Frank Hitton, and talking a bit about the recent report brought down by the Productivity Committee into a commission and their final report into the childcare and early childhood learning that was brought down just this month. So we'll talk about what's in it there, particularly for First Nations families. So stay with us here on 98.9 FM. A week ago today, the long-awaited Productivity Commission's report into childcare was released, two mixed reviews, and today we're going to hear the impressions from the Secretariat of the National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare. They call themselves SNAKE for short, and I'm with the CEO, Frank Hitton. Welcome to Let's Talk, Frank.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Firstly, tell us a bit about yourself. You're not First Nations yourself?
No, I was born in India, came out here as a child with my family, migrated, but I got involved fairly early when I was doing a youth work course, won't tell you how long ago, in basically a framework that was not about putting band-aids on bleeding wounds, but trying to change the system so that the wounds wouldn't be created. So it became engaged in social justice, which was then built on a human rights framework. And I guess that's what I've been doing ever since, with a range of different groups of people, and probably for the last 12, 13 years within the Aboriginal community.
Right. And how long have you been with SNAKE itself?
Pushing 6 years. I'll be 6 years in April.
All right. Tell people about what the Secretariat is.
Yes, essentially the Secretariat was set up about 33, 34 years ago by Aboriginal people working with children and basically getting together to form a stronger lobby base, advocacy base, federally, to get a better deal for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander children and families. So it was set up and still is. Our membership are all Aboriginal organisations, Aboriginal-controlled organisations, who then nominate an Aboriginal person to sit on the National Executive, which has two representatives from every state and territory, plus two others who are elected nationally to provide expertise in each of those two, in each of two areas. One is the child protection or the child and family sector, and the other is the early years sector. So the two people from each jurisdiction come one each of those two sectors.
What is the state of both of those sectors? I mean, we hear quite often that in terms of child protection, that our children are obviously overrepresented in that particular area. But what about in terms of early childhood development? What do we have there in terms of what's available for our mob?
Well, you're right. In both sectors, things are perhaps drifting backwards. Drifting may be too mild a word. But going to the earlier sector, in response to your question, there are something like 35 MAX services, which is a multifunctional Aboriginal children's services that was set up 25 or 6 years ago. They have not been adequately maintained in terms of funding, so they haven't been receiving CPI. The last grant they got to bring them up a bit was in 2003, which means those services are, unless they've got funding from other sources, are gradually being forced into being monofunctional childcare services as opposed to being community hubs, which is what they were set up to be. After considerable lobbying over the last decade, perhaps, by SNAKE and others, the Labor government previous Labor government set up a further 38 Aboriginal community children's centres called ACFCs, that's the Aboriginal Child and Family Centres. Now, those services are and also in a little bit of strife because they were jointly funded between the federal government and the relevant state or territory. The federal government last year chose to withdraw its funding and will not fund those 38 services, will not offer federal funding to those 38 services, which means most of those services, all of those services, have lost that money, which is about 50% of what they need to run an effective service.
So what was the rationale behind that, Frank, from the position of SNAIC? Was it the tightening of the belts as, you know, that sort of thing to do with the budget, or was it more to do with the change in arrangements for funding of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander programs?
It was probably a bit of both, but the federal government's decision is, in my view, ideological, that the federal government doesn't fund these sorts of programs because the states should fund them. The word should is, you know, always a pointless word because the money's got to come from somewhere and the states get most of their money from the federal government anyhow. So for the federal government to start to refuse to fund those sorts of things is a decision made on ideology, not on rationale. There's no argument to say they'd be better off if they were funded purely by the states. Some states and territories are putting up some money. The Northern Territory is going to fund them, but the Northern Territory gets a lot of its money through the federal government anyhow. And other states are doing similar sorts of things. In Victoria, I think the temporary arrangements in Queensland or in New South Wales for some services, there's a temporary arrangement to fund them for a further 6 or 12 months. But their futures are quite uncertain. The federal government's response to us and us putting this argument that the money needs to be funded so that these services can operate effectively is that they should go to A, the states, B, to philanthropics, and C, to corporates. Now, anyone who's been in the sector for more than 10 minutes knows that philanthropic funding is not recurrent and cannot sustain a core funding for services, and corporates will not fund core funding for services anyway. It's not their job apart from anything else. So that's a kind of a tangential argument that is utterly dishonest in my view. As far as the states go, the states, and we've talked to them, will basically say that where are we going to get the money from? This is supposed to be a federal joint funded program. If the federal government withdraws, we will try to do something, but we haven't got the money to cover it. So it's still at that stage of argy-bargy. One hopes that common sense will prevail eventually. But at the moment, things are pretty up in the air for most services.
And what about the corporate sector? I mean, what is the feedback coming from that? I mean, when they talk about corporate, do they mean like privatising childcare centres and the services like these ACFC centres?
Yeah. Not so much privatising, though that's no doubt around the corner. It's more that we give that they're suggesting that corporate body, which are private companies, for-profit companies, and arguably mining companies and soft drink companies and whoever's out there, will provide funding to keep these services going. That's not going to happen. Even where those sorts of organisations fund things, they're under a legal obligation to fund things that enhance their agency, their profit line. That's what they're there for. They're not there to fund philanthropic stuff except through their philanthropic arms. And even then, no philanthropic will pick up recurrent ongoing funding, because that's not their job anyhow. Their job is to top up things if and when the need arises and it suits their interests, which is fair enough.
Well, you've talked about the sector itself. What is the actual need out there for these services?
Well, the SNAIC had our way, and of course no one ever gets their way entirely. We would like to see probably double the number of child and family services that are properly funded. Properly funded probably means an operating cost of around $1 million a year, plus or minus, depending on where they are. And these services are not just childcare services, which is the point we're trying to get through to the federal government. They're actually community hubs. They're community-controlled, Aboriginal community-controlled services. And as such, they provide a whole range of supports in that community. So a parent, mostly the mum, but a parent comes to the service to drop off their child, they can talk to one of the staff in the service, and particularly if they're properly funded, you could have someone's role dedicated to this or a number of people doing a bit of this. They're dropping off their child, and they can talk about perhaps finance management, how they can better manage their money, or they can talk about feeling low because they don't have employment, or they can talk about a whole range of tasks in their relationship with their partner.
So it's a sort of like a holistic thing, looks at everything that can impact on the child's development.
And let's face it, if the family is stable and secure, then the child is stable and secure. If the family has got a whole lot of stuff happening, a mum and dad have got a whole lot of stuff happening between them, financial problems or drinking or gambling or just bad relationships or whatever, then the child becomes unstable and unhappy. And that means that that child will carry those kinds of feelings for most of their life unless some other intervention helps them get work through it. So it is a community hub. Now, the services don't provide expert support. They provide chats over cups of tea, as it were, metaphoric cup of tea and a chat, but they also can provide referral. Now, many of these services also have, say, a health service come in 1 or 2 days a week, depending on demand, a dental service to come in and do some checks on children's teeth, and a whole range of other people can come in to provide different expertise on different issues if the parent group appear to be interested or ask for it. So they're there as a community hub, the old neighbourhood house kind of idea from 20 years ago, and these services can provide that. And they provide it in an anonymous way because parents are just dropping off their kids and parents are being involved with their kids in preschool. So it's a really, really good model. And to start to effectively defund it makes no rational sense because it'll save some money now, but it will probably increase the cost of supporting people,
later down the track.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
And in terms of, I know that looking at the fabric, I suppose, of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, the demographics, it is a young population. There are more people at that younger age scale than there are at the older age scale. So there is that need there. There are more and more young people under 25 and a growing population in that 0 to 6 age, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the growing population amongst Aboriginal people. And it's a significantly growing population when compared to non-Aboriginal children as well, or the average non-Aboriginal demographic. Yep.
We are with Frank Hitton, who is the CEO of SNAIC, which stands for the Secretariat of National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare, which is a national peak body for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and families. Frank, as I mentioned before, we had that long-awaited review into childcare. That report was tabled in Parliament a week ago today. What's basically in it for the sector?
Well, it's a mixed bag, really, and contradictory, as many of these reports are. One of the things that the report acknowledges is that there is a service gap, if you like, that the number of places required for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander children is something like 15,000 additional places are needed to achieve parity for Indigenous children. Now, that's a good thing. That means that there should be more services presumably built in. And that's a lot of services. That even if you take it at 100 places per service, that's a lot of places, a lot of services, 150 new services. We would welcome that. And, of course, they need to be placed judiciously where Aboriginal populations are and so on. On the other hand, the Productivity Commission reports that, creates a new program called CELP, which stands for Community Early Learning Program, funded under the early years kind of umbrella for Aboriginal children, but then says that they need to be mainstreamed. So the services they're suggesting be set up have a 5-year business plan to transition to mainstream funding. Now, that to me is a contradiction. On the one hand, they're saying there's a need to get Aboriginal types services that cater for Aboriginal children up. On the other hand, they're saying that these need to be mainstreamed, which means that they won't be very effective if from everything we know, Aboriginal children are best located in Aboriginally culturally appropriate, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander culturally appropriate services. So it's a mixed bag. On the one hand, it's good news that they're trying to create these extra places, which will cost the government money, so there's a fair chance they won't do it. And on the other hand, they're saying, well, once they're set up, they should be mainstreamed, which, if history is anything to learn by, then Aboriginal children will start to drop out anyway and more mainstream children will get in. I'm not opposed to mainstream children having children's services either.
Sorry, Frank, to interrupt you. Can you just clarify that? So when you're talking about mainstreamed, you're talking about the service itself having to compete with other childcare services for the limited dollars that are out there anyway, or are you saying that children will have to then, well, presumably the next lot of children that come through will have to go to a mainstream-run childcare centre?
The implication, yes, both those things.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't sit well with SNAIC or with the sector.
No, it doesn't, because what we're arguing is that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children need culturally specific and supportive services which are built around this hub model which cater for the whole community. It's not just for the children being taken care of in a sort of a childcare service from whatever time, X number of hours a day. It needs to be a hub-type service that's part of the community and functions as a community like the old neighbourhood house to a greater or lesser extent. And this is, on the one hand, suggesting that if we're understanding it properly, a suggestion that is what's set up, but that within 5 years they transition into becoming mainstream services, which means they're no longer, presumably, Aboriginal control or focused around Aboriginal children. They become services that are for anybody who lives in that area.
And has that, I mean, you've had a week, I suppose, to look at this, to absorb what the Productivity Commission has said. Have you had a chance to clarify with them what they mean by that whole thing of mainstream? Because obviously it can mean many different things.
Yeah. No, we haven't. We have written a response, but we haven't had any clarification and we probably won't get it for a while yet.
All right. So what's the current model now?
Well, essentially, as I said earlier, you've got a number of services. Some have been traditionally funded like 25 years ago, the MAX services. There are 38 new ACFC services, which are the same model, essentially, as the MAC, but much better funded, which have now been defunded by the federal government or had funding withdrawn from the federal government. There's also a further 200 and something, nearly 300, what they call budget-based BBF services, which are playgroups and much smaller things that are dotted all over, particularly remote regional kind of areas. So a playgroup may have one half-time worker and work out of, say, the health service in an area. So there's a whole range of those smaller ones. Part of what the Productivity Commission did, and I know that the department was really concerned that this is half a dozen different sorts of models, half a dozen different levels of funding, half a dozen different criteria for funding, budget-based funding, which means people did not have to seek private funding or parent funding to run it. They simply got a block of money each year, which was a pre-agreed, and they got the same block every year. The original agreement was that you get the block and you'll have a CPI increase each year so that your funding keeps up with costs. That hasn't happened, but in any case, it was a block of funding. The new model would suggest that for that, community early learning programs, CELP, KELP services, they would get block grants, which means the parents don't have to pay money to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
They still contribute, by the way. Parents continue to contribute, but it's much more based on what their income is, what the capacity to pay is. If we go to the private kind of model, the parent will have to pay whatever the service sets as their marketable amount of money that they require. If the parent can't pay that, then the child won't be able to attend.
So it basically becomes like a user pay system.
Basically, and that's what the current federal government, indeed all governments, but the current government is particularly aggressive in this kind of way of saying making everything user pays and, you know, people should do this and should do that.
Is there also a concern that the focus will be on rural and remote communities rather than those urban centres where the large populations of First Nations people reside?
I think that is one of the flavours, if you like, in the report, that it does recognise that the program should be extended beyond rural and remote communities mm-hmm. to include urban inner city where there are plenty of Aboriginal children in need of service. And the challenge often, and it is a genuine challenge, but very often putting a service into an area, there is an Aboriginal population, but it's not big enough to sustain the service, so non-Aboriginal people attend. Now, where that is occurring, there's never been a problem. Aboriginal services have often prioritised Aboriginal children, say in Melbourne or Perth or capital cities anyway, but they've never excluded non-Aboriginal children. The problem will come when, if you have a model on user pays, then given that Aboriginal people are amongst the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, then they are the ones who are likely to drop out first, which means the service will gradually get more and more non-Aboriginal children filling it because the service needs the money to keep it going, keep its doors open.
Mm. So it is a bit of a quandary at the moment. Are you concerned also that the needs of this sector may be lost in the debate happening now, where it seems to be about the actual childcare costs and who receives subsidies and whether nannies should be included in that and that sort of discussion at the moment?
Well, I think those things are of great concern to SNAIC, and as reported by our members and the board, these things are pushing in the opposite direction to the directions that have evolved over the last 20, 30, even 40 years perhaps, when it was discovered, in inverted commas, gee, we've got an Aboriginal population who are struggling. Why it took so long to discover that is another moot point, I guess. But the direction has been for quite a long time that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community need quite a lot of support to recover from the events of the last 200 years or the 200 years before, where people were excluded and marginalised and disallowed educations and disallowed basic rights. So the last 30, 40 years has been trying to, in a very minor way, in my view, in a fairly timid way, resource Aboriginal communities to sort out how they can best move forward in their own direction, although government has put lots of barriers and lots of conditions on that. At least it's been to some extent happening. What I think seems to be happening now, and I speak for me for this rather than for SNAIC, I better be careful because I haven't talked about this with the board. What I think seems to be happening now is that we've got a user-pay, free-for-all kind of system evolving, not just for Aboriginal people, but for everybody, in which people who are poor or excluded or marginalised in society are going to pay a much bigger penalty.
And if they whinge about it, it's their fault. I mean, does that seem to be the general feeling you get from discussion about these sorts of things, or people who are disadvantaged?
Yeah. And everyone now under this brave new world that we seem to be in, again, we've been here before, of course, but we're here again. It's proved wrong each time, but there's anyone who can't keep up, it's your own fault. You've got to pull your fingers out and do better, work harder, etc. If you look at employment issues, exactly the same thing's happening. Everyone's got to be at school, everyone's got to be at work, but no one's talking about creating jobs. The pressure of people to get to work, you know, new mums, that sort of thing, get back into the workforce. Hey, there's got to be the jobs to get back into the workforce. And if there aren't jobs, then how can it be? But it's still being said, it's your own fault, you should be in a job. So, yes, there's a lot of contradictions. Essentially what, if I can digress, we're talking about a neoliberal economic model which always punishes the poor and always rewards the rich. And I probably shouldn't have said that, but oops.
You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. We're speaking with the National Peak Body for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Children and Families, the Secretariat of National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare. The CEO is Frank Hitton. We'll come back to Frank in just a moment here on Let's Talk. And we are with Frank Hitton, who is the CEO of the Secretariat of National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare. Frank, where to from now after this Productivity Commission? As you said, mentioned before, that the voice might be lost in all this current debate about nannies and that sort of thing and the single payment.
I think in one sense it's business as usual. Organisations like SNAIC cannot encourage every other organisation that is interested in justice, basic justice, to keep lobbying, to keep talking to the department, to keep talking to local members of parliament, to keep talking to SNAIC, to take their views, community views, to government and to the opposition. We talk a lot with opposition parties, of course, and we talk a lot with government. Our first call is always government. But the only way any of this stuff will change or take shape is if government or if enough people put pressure. So to me, it's business as usual, in the sense of how do we actually get around some of this stuff. It's really just political pressure. It's really about trying to understand how the system works and where we can have...
make an impact?
Where we can have the most impact.
Influence.
Impact. Yeah.
So is that like mums and dads, grandparents, particularly of First Nations communities, getting in touch with their local member or contacting the minister directly, Scott Morrison?
Yep, I think the local members are quite powerful. If they get, 20 phone calls or 20 visits, even better, face-to-face visits. And don't be afraid of them is what I'd be saying to people. They're just people. Mostly they do care. They may not understand, but they do actually don't want to see damage done to people, in my experience. They're reasonably good people, mostly. The vast majority are good people. But they don't know, they don't understand. They're locked into a system that they can't control anyhow. But talking to those people has an impact, because then they will go and talk to the relevant minister or the prime minister. To go to them face-to-face meeting and with a letter that says, these are our concerns, and, SNAIC's website is one place to get information, but I'm sure there's others. Talk to National Congress, just to let them know, CC National Congress in. What we need to do is create a kind of an energy around these issues that basically says that what's being done is going to disadvantage Aboriginal community. So go on.
What about the services themselves?
Yeah.
Are they now not able to meet the demand that's there? And so, is there anything the community can do to support those local services, the MAC services you were talking about earlier, the ACFC centres you were just talking about as well?
Well, I think the ACFCs and the MAC services have a natural catchment called the parents and the parents' friends mm-hmm. of the children who use their service.
Yeah, pretty much like PNCs at schools and that sort of thing, yep.
They've immediately got their own board and they've got maybe 50 kids or 100 kids. That means they've got access to 50 or 100 parents. Those parents must have at least one friend, who'd be prepared to say something or do something. So I think it's about understanding political process and being brave enough to engage with the political process. And a lot of people, Aboriginal or otherwise, are afraid of the political process because they don't want to be exposed in some sense. It's a perfectly safe process and you have absolutely every right to talk to your representatives because that's their job. So that, I think, is the most powerful thing that we can do collectively. If people do want to hear more, talk more, they can ring SNAIC. We can send out information that they can base a letter on. So they just have to pull out three or four sentences from our media release, for example, and write a letter about that. Or they can download the whole commission report, which is about 700-800 pages, and read that.
I think there's probably been a collective groan around the First Nations community. Then it's another report.
Yep, report number 342. We're up to 2,000 recommendations that have been ignored so far, particularly in the child protection space.
Yeah.
So I think that those are the sorts of things that need to be done. And again, the reason that the wealthier communities, people get what they want is because they've got the resources to have someone reading the 600-page report and addressing them the next 47 recommendations, you know. Whereas communities that are already strapped for time and money and energy and knowledge and education and all those other things don't have the capacity to respond. But that's what SNAIC, organisations like SNAIC are for.
And Congress are for.
And National Congress. That's what we're here for. We're limited capacity as well. But this is our job, to read this stuff and to try to give people information that they can, interpretation, if you like, of information that they can do something with, and to hear other people's interpretation of what's being said in terms of what they want us to do with it.
You mentioned a website?
Yes, SNAIC's website. Just Google SNAIC, S-N-A-I-C-C, and you'll get SNAIC's website.
All right. Can we give out the office number?
Yep. People can ring 03, which is a Melbourne-based office, 039489-8099, and they can either ask for me or they can ask for Emma or John.
All right.
Those are my two senior policy people. And we're not always going to be here because we're in Canberra or somewhere else, but get on to us and we will try to find a way of responding to everybody who comes in around this issue. But, you know, we would really like it if people were prepared to react, not just take up our time.
Yes.
Put it crudely.
Well, you have to do something because obviously there are long-term implications if this transition does happen.
Yeah. And I think that the danger is that even this report is confused. So they managed to put together 700-800 pages and their recommendations are a little bit confused around this issue. Let's have more places, but then let's take them away again. That doesn't make sense given the growth, the trajectory of the population and so on.
Well, Frank, thank you very much for joining us today and bringing us up to speed on what that productivity report and its implications on the sector that you represent. And as I mentioned, you can call SNAIC if you want further information. And that number again is 03-9489-8099. And Google SNAICC to go to their website where you can find a link to the report and also, all the other position papers and your media release, as you said.
Yeah.
All right, Frank, thank you very much.
Terrific, Caroline. Thank you for having us.
Frank Hitton, who is the CEO of the Secretariat for National Aboriginal and Islander Childcare, a peak body for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and families based in Melbourne. And that is Let's Talk for today. I'm Karen Durante. Thanks for listening.